Stephen has built a seven-figure business by using predictable outreach. Now he's the founder and CEO of Sales Ignition, which helps startups and large companies start conversations that will bring consistent growth. There are so many things that either aren't as effective as they have been in the past. Trade shows, generic lead lists, visiting prospects, jumping into negotiations, and many more of the traditional methods are giving way to the better method of predictable prospecting. In this podcast, Stephen reveals how focusing on the tools in your stack could be hurting you, tips to figure out your perfect fit and fill your prospect list, and gearing your message to show what's in it for your customers. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining. It's Mary Lou Tyler, Predictable Prospecting. Today, I have a very special guest. His name is Stephen Wagner. We go back a little ways. He was a person of interest. I love that term. But he was someone who really, sort of embraced the initial, what I call predictable revenue model back in 2011, and actually probably earlier than that. And did some amazing stuff with his previous company. Today he's here to talk with us as the CEO and founder of Sales Ignition. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Stephen and have him give us an understanding of where he's been, what paths he's taken, because he's sort of been in the trenches fighting fires with the rest of us, but actually executing and, you know, building an empire from his, essentially from the ground up, yeah?
Yes. Yeah. I'd like to think so.
So without further ado, Stephen.
Thank you. So I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today, Mary Lou. My background is that I started a company called Dealer Ignition, and that company was because I had, prior to that, worked for Ford Motor Company. And at Ford, I was responsible for doing business development offices and dealerships around the United States and integrating, at that time, the emergence of the internet into dealers. And I saw some big gaps there. And one of the biggest gaps was that Ford was investing in all these online technologies, but most of the dealers were not really able to use it because, as you can appreciate, they just didn't have the scale or the team to do so. So I created Dealer Ignition to create a suite of tools for dealers. And then what it allowed was manufacturers to connect with it. And like probably some of your listeners, I built the software before I really had my first customer. I had some, I would call them options, or at least some interested parties, but we built the software and then launched it and really hadn't built the pipeline. And so I came and found predictable revenue at probably our darkest hour, which was a fully involved development team with a piece of software. And we had one or two kind of trial customers and didn't really have any other method for going out and trying to build the business. And so my first initial, I guess, touch of it was maybe a slideshow presentation or a PDF that you guys had before you ever had written really the book. And I kind of resonated with the method there. And so really used and tailored the process that Predictable Revenue outlines and used it at that point to grow the business into seven figures. And we were adding 30 new accounts a month, and we were constantly growing through the process that Predictable Revenue kind of outlined, and then what we had to do to make it kind of work for the clients that we went after. That business was a little different than probably hopefully anyone else's, because it was a two-sided market. We would actually use Predictable Revenue to go after enterprise customers, and then we would also use it because an enterprise would ask us to, for instance, get their dealers to enroll in the software. So we had to actually do it at the SMB size market too. So we would turn around and then have to use Predictable Revenue to outreach into thousands of dealers across the country to try to get them to demo and to see the product and to see the value of it and then buy it. So we got really good at having to do that because that's the only way we really could survive. So that company, we got kind of rolled up because of so there's a lot of backstory to kind of the disposition of the company in the future. But When that got all finished, I started Sales Ignition with a business partner of mine, Joe Milam. And Joe's a successful entrepreneur too. We just kept saying that the problem of trying to build and create that kind of system is a challenge for startups as well as even some large companies to use that particular mm-hmm. revenue model. So we started Sales Ignition, and we really try to help businesses do that. And so today we've created a company, and we provide kind of a managed service, if you like to call it that, to help people kind of get up and running and run it consistently for them from the prospecting side of it. They still have to have salespeople, but that's kind of what we do today is help them on that prospecting side of it.
So let's go back to, there's a couple of things that I thought were really interesting. I didn't realize it was this far back, but you said that you were actually playbooking off of a PDF file or mm-hmm. Kind of like a soon-to-be version of the book. Now, the book came out in 2011. So, majority of the case study with Salesforce, I think it was in 2003. So it was somewhere in that window then, right, between 2003 and 2009 that you started getting, drinking the Kool-Aid, as they say, or getting really involved with this type of outreach.
Yeah, we had signed a handful of customers, and we were, when I really kind of dug into it deeply, I just had to actually fire one of my best good friends of mine who was in business development for us at the time, because his approach wasn't very sustainable. It was your old field sales approach where you go out and visit the customer and try to negotiate. And to be honest, we were self-funding the business. We had some angel money, but there wasn't a lot of funds to kind of grow the business. Just we didn't have the time or luxury that, you know, additional capital would have given us. So mm-hmm. having to go through that, it was saying, what other methods can we do this? Because we just couldn't go and visit everyone. So I'd say about 2009, 2010 was about the time frame of when we really kind of had read or got introduced to it. And I think it was literally doing a search maybe on cold calling. I don't even recall that.
Yeah, it was called Cold Calling 2.0 or buildasalesmachine.com. That was mm-hmm. the previous website that was used, and it was just some classroom instruction, a little bit of webinar type of information, and downloads, I think, was all that was out there. And it's amazing to see where it's moved from, but I think the core concepts are basically that this is a channel that we use when we want to really be targeted and segmented in our approach to sales. And I think you discovered early on, as you said, you had two different segments that you needed to go after. And that whole feet on the street, belly to belly type of sales is very expensive. I mean, I still have clients who want to do trade shows, want to do dinners, want to do this, that, these, and those, and they don't really have an ROI behind it. So it's interesting to see that especially in upmarket companies, there's not necessarily an acceptance all the way around about trying an outreach for this purpose of generating predictable revenue.
Yeah, I would agree. And one of the things that we had was I had an advisor and an investor at the time who had created a company that kind of was called DataStream back in the day. They sold software to like maintenance groups of different companies. And, you know, they had to have an inside sales team because they couldn't do, like you said, go out and visit everyone. And they, back before it was ever having a name or a structure, kind of realized a couple of key, I think, parts of what the cold calling, whatever it was called, 2.0 and predictable revenue was, is that you have to have people that specialize. You have to have people who can do the volume, and you have to have obviously a big enough market that you can justify it and make enough in whatever you're selling to afford all these people to generate the opportunities. And so what's interesting now is that we're seeing these big companies who used to do, like you said, large trade shows mm-hmm. and other things coming back and asking us, hey, we're not seeing the ROI from trade shows anymore. We want to do and see what startups are doing or fast growth companies are doing and implementing. And so it's almost like the really big companies, and we have one right now, it's multinational, they're kind of now to the point where they want to kind of pivot on it because they also, like you said, don't see the ROI. And one of the big things that I think happened too that maybe helped accelerate this was once you had 9/11 and stuff, there was a fair amount of travel constraints that a lot of places had for a long time about right. going and having this many people at shows. And if that's your way of getting your business, then, you know, you really start to drain yourself out of it. And in some industries, companies start to do their own private trade shows and don't go to the major trade shows. So some of your probably key buyers might be at a, you know, vendor specific event and not at the major trade show because they just don't, you know, they don't go to it anymore. I know that happened in some of our clients' industries where their buyers would get cherry picked before they ever actually had their big trade show for the year. So it's definitely one of those things you have to kind of consider. I think it's a more sustainable path if you can really implement and execute
right.
predictable revenue.
So this is your own personal second effort and company at that I'm sure you've built a lot of companies, but I'm thinking using the framework, this is probably the mm-hmm. second, Sales Ignition is probably the second company. What were the mm-hmm. major lessons that you learned or the experiences that you think would be of value to someone listening to this call and thinking, you know, I want to figure this out for my company for a first timer. You know, how do you fast track somebody? What are the things that you can share that you learned that you immediately put into practice for Sales Ignition?
Good question. Find the one key thing that's going to make your sales funnel begin or get kind of solidified with someone. So if it's conversations, measure how many conversations a day or a week that you're having mm-hmm. and the disposition of those conversations and not focusing all your time on the tools and the messaging. I think you have to get and iterate on, but I see far too many other founders or people that would come and ask myself or my partner and I advice, they always worry about the tools. You know, people spend more time wondering what CRM to use and not really worrying about, did I send out enough today or did I send out enough this week to follow up on it and to actually get some opportunities on the calendar.
Right. That's a big thing with the smaller companies, or this whole concept of sales stack is mm-hmm. something I don't usually hear about. And, you know, the only reason why I know now is because I'm kind of hanging my hat a little bit in the lower end market as I do some mm-hmm. speaking engagements and things. And they're always talking about sales stack. Well, in upmarket companies, you have to like move mountains to get software put into the IT umbrella. And the only tools are, you know, they have the standard tools, but they're not going to really worry about which of the 200 tools that they could use is the best stack. They're focusing on how do I get more conversations that are meaningful in nature? What do I need to say and to whom? Why should they change? Why now? And why use us? So it's all about mm-hmm. why I matter. Yeah. But getting to them to that point, getting them over the technology piece, I don't see that a lot in my area, but I've been seeing that a lot in the SMB space for sure.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good tools out there today, much more than there ever were before. And I think that that's good, but I think the problem becomes that you spend so much time thinking that the tool will provide the result and not the work. And
right.
I'd say the next thing is you have to have a really good source for data. You know, you have to have a good contact database of any kind that you can rely on. And some are very trade specific and some are just have to be kind of built or cultivated on your own. But, you know, I see this a lot. If you're new to this and you haven't done a lot of it, go out and find a partner that can help you with it, because I think it'll rapidly increase the quality and also reduce your learning time, and just get a good source of data. I see too often, you know, they'll go and get data from one of the common sources and haven't really been vetted out or appended with any important information for the business, and then they try to contact it and it doesn't get them results. And so then they get frustrated because maybe they didn't realize the data that they have isn't very good quality. It's not what they thought they should be, who they should be contacting, but just the quality of the information they did have.
An immutable law of outreach and outbound prospecting is that we live and die by the list.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely.
And the list in my framework is the fifth thing we worry about. There are four things before that that we worry about in order to be able to create the right query and understand where to source the eventual list. And like you mentioned, uh-huh. a couple things about the buyer persona profiles, the ideal account profiles. There's also the SWOT, or SWOT, I call it a SWOT 6 because we drill down six different ways on the SWOT, which is strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, so that we can get an understanding of where we fit in the marketplace. And all of these factors kind of get thrown in this big pot, and then from there we figure out what this list should look like. And then, and only then, do we source it. And like you said, there are a number of different sources. Some you have to build yourself. Some you can purchase names. But, you know, if you're a Salesforce person, you just naturally think data.com is going to help you. And it's not. It is not, people. You know, the deliverability rates. I mean, there's so many other things you have to look at. But for the outbound prospecting, in order to generate a predictable revenue stream of highly qualified opportunities, that list is your sort of like, what do they call it? Not kryptonite, but the opposite. it is the gold that you need in order to be able to move mountains, to go to the next step.
I think the last thing that happens is that far too often early on in the process, people write a lot of emails about what they do. Mm-hmm. And everything is concentrated on, we do this, and we work with, you know, maybe they say who they work with, but a lot of it is very us-centric, like what we do and why we think it's important and why you should probably have interest. And the thing that we really had to help people with now is we created a value grid to do this, but it's to put your messaging in terms of what's in it for them. And to whatever messaging you're going to do with this kind of process has to be at the benefit of the person receiving it, because that's the only way you're going to get responses for the whole system to really work in effect. And that takes sometimes a fair amount of iterations to get right. And so we created the grid because it really helps from startups all the way to very big multinationals. Very often everything isn't really kind of what, as a customer, what was their day like before mm-hmm. and after using your product? What did they feel before and after? So, you know, and what did they have before and after? Do they have chaos before and now they have something that's organized? Do they have stress in their life? So there's, you know, the fact that their projects are all over the place, they're in spreadsheets and they're not organized and they're getting missed deadlines and, you know, whatever those things are. So you create a value grid in which you answer basically the before and after. What did they have? What did they feel? What was their average day like before and after your product? And then what was their status before and after? So, mm-hmm. you know, we see this very often in really good marketing or advertising, you know, like P90X. P90X shows you the before and after pictures. And right. people buy a lot of that because that's what it shows. And so if your outreach has that, then people are going to be interested. But far too often, you know, you've probably gotten it. I get a lot of it too from people who are trying to do cold emails, and they're all about what that firm does. And you're like, that's great. That's what you do. I don't see any reason for me to reply to this because it's all about you. It doesn't engage me. It doesn't ask me a question for me to even reply or to, right. you know, so.
The other thing that I just saw, a client actually forwarded me emails as he was getting them from a vendor up in San Francisco. She had, I think, six in-thread replies. It's like, did you get my message? Hey, I'm just checking. Did you get my message? You know, over and over and over again. No value at all. And it was like, wow. Because he wrote to me saying, is this the predictable revenue model, Mary? And I'm like, no, it's not. But, you know, it was like, wow. It's just the abuse of the psychology of in-thread. I get it. It's like when you see a reply, you're thinking, oh, shoot, I forgot to look at something previously. But if you're not adding value to that in-thread reply, like you said, and putting it into what's important to them, and so they're not just, you know, swiping left or right. My kids were telling me about this app where you swipe left and something is swipe right and it's something else. I mean, that's essentially what people are doing with these emails, is that they're just spamming people, but in a way now that's psychology is with the in-threads, but it's not adding any value. And I could not believe that the peoples are still spamming like that. It's just unbelievable to me.
Yeah, we found that that's one of the things that you have to do, and one of the early things we like to do with any new customer is to sit down and create just a spreadsheet that says, who are your customers? Who are all the people that bought the product? Why did they buy it from you? Who was involved in that decision? And then what did they get out of it? And what did you, if it's a technology product, sometimes you say, what technology things did the client have that you integrated with, or that you helped them integrate improve with?
Right.
Because to your point, if all I send is an inline thread in which it's like, did you get this? I'd really like an answer, or, repetitively like that. To your point, there's no trigger. There's nothing for the person receiving it to really, they'll either delete it or they'll tell you to go, jump in the ocean or whatever the reply is for that kind of annoyance. Instead, you can ask questions like, hey, the reason I'm outreaching to you is because we've helped a couple other companies that use the same thing that we think that you use, like whatever that technology is. Mm-hmm. Now there's a trigger, we'd
right.
like to have a conversation. So that's why we think, like, with the value grid, it puts everybody back on the same page. And as you can appreciate, if you're trying to do predictable revenue and you bring in your first sales development rep and you're trying to get them up to speed, one of the most valuable things they can know is why other people ever bought from you. Because
yes.
they're going to have to at some point do some creative thinking when they are either on the phone or replying to someone in the moment. And they have to have kind of this arsenal with them that gets them up to speed and as well-versed as they can be. If you're a founder or you're the VP of sales and you've been doing the deals, there's all those little nuances that might help that SDR as they reach out on your behalf to another customer or potential customer. So
it sounds like you called it a grid. It sounds like you guys have thought through a process and mapped it into, I don't want to say step by step, but at least some type of framework. Is that where you're at now with helping clients? Is that you've actually crafted a methodology that can guarantee more of a successful assembly, activation, and optimization of an outreach framework?
We have. We both myself and my partner Joe have done a lot of this, and he's done it for other companies. So we've seen the good and the bad, and as you can appreciate, taking years of doing it okay and trying to get it better, and then knowing what those key levers are. And so we provide a framework. So whether it's in some cases it's helping them craft the message that goes along with the people they're trying to reach out to. In some cases, it's the offer. A lot of times there's no offer for the recipient to really take the person up on it. So, mm-hmm. If it's a demo or if it's a document or if it's a conversation/phone call, you have to put that offer into some context, and you have to have, in some cases, a deadline or something that causes an action to happen. And so we help clients put all these pieces together to do that and then go and use this in the market that they're going to go after. And
that
so
sounds
for us,
great.
We
yeah. How big
yeah,
is this grid?
There's really two main grids to it. You have a grid in which you're asking the questions before and after. Mm-hmm. So what did the person have before and after? What did the person feel before and after? What was their average day like before and after? And what was their status before and after? And the great thing about the grid is you work on it, your team can work on it, take a couple customers and think about how they would answer it. But then if you ever have other customers to do testimonials with, press releases, you want to do webinars, you want to do anything of any value, people remember stories more than anything else. So if you're going to do predictable revenue and you don't really have a story like, hey, we helped this company do X and Y, or we helped, here's something from the VP of sales at XYZ company, how we help them grow their pipeline, right? They remember stories far more than information.
Right.
So you have a grid now in which if you ever had to sit down with a customer, you could ask, really, it's four questions. Use those four questions mm-hmm. to get the answers that are going to help sell yourself to your next customers. So if it's your, you know, your customer is going to tell you, you know, before I used this product, I was, you know, my average day was like this, and I had these problems in my business, and I felt this way because of it. And because of that, it made my status feel like this. And so you get them to answer it as well. And now you have something that's far more powerful than we're a company that does X, Y, Z, like we mentioned earlier. It's just a very generic message. And that really starts to compound it. And then you just itemize the last 10, 20, 30, however many deals you have as to who it was, to what company it is, who all was actually in the buying process, what exactly they were looking for, what you delivered, and any other technologies and other pieces of that that you helped solve. So if you took marketing automation and made it work with a CRM or any of those pieces, those are the things that people want to have. And so now what you've got is your sales development rep can be on the phone with someone, and if they're trying to set an appointment with a VP who wants to connect marketing automation, they can say, we just helped ABC company actually connect this, and these people were in the decision, and what they were looking for was this, and we delivered that. So you have this kind of now formula that people in their mind get, and it's a story, and they start to see that, and makes what you can do for them much easier. And so a sales development rep can think on their feet, and they can reply, and they can get these answers that help keep people going. Because, you know, one of the biggest things that early on you learn with doing sales development is, you know, if it's a new person, they're trying to learn not only what they have to do, but how to do it and what to say. And if you can help them with what to say, then you're really giving them only concentrating on what they have to do and how to do it. So that's kind of what we've seen is kind of the power behind it. And then, you know, you should have that if you're in any sale, no matter how big your sales team is, because, you know, there's always, you know, enabling them to do something. But many people in an organization forget who all was involved in the decision and why they were buying and what they got. So the grid really gives you kind of a playbook, or at least a framework to work with on conversations and engagement with your target market.
Yeah, I love that, because, you know, being an engineer, excuse me, myself, I'm all about analytics. I'm a data lover. And so, you know, I kind of break it down into three different stool legs. Descriptive analytics is what you're talking about, of gathering the information of what's happened. And you sounds like your framework, which I'm going to ask you about, if you would be willing to post that for our audience, because I know I've got some people driving down the road thinking, well, is it going to be like in the show notes somewhere so I can see what it looks like? But anyway, you know, we really work through descriptively where we've been, and then we put our predictive hat on and we figure out, you know, what will we be wanting to do next week, next quarter, next year? And then we figure out, from a prescriptive analytic point of view, is, okay, now that we know where we've been, we know where we want to go, what do we got with our team, and how can, you know, we use limited resources? Because I heard you mention a ton of things about that once you get the grid filled in, you have storyline, you have structure, you have the ability to create content assets that will help move your prospects positionally from a cold status through a working status to a qualified op and then beyond. Now, I don't go past qualified op, but you do. You do the whole pipeline, correct?
We'll get them all the way to a sales qualified opportunity, yes.
Okay, so you're like us. You're like me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, so it's what we're trying to do is create an engine where you decide, like I'm working with a client right now, it's time to turn the spigot on full blast, because we've perfected as much as we can and gotten the conversion rates, both intra and inter, of the content assets, the emails, the voice scripts, everything else we've worked on that are assets for the pipeline are now humming along. So now all we have to do is put more records through it. And that will give us the ability to generate predictable revenue, because we know all of our conversion rates for meaningful mm-hmm. conversations. So the grid sounds like that's a great way. Four questions, people. Four questions, you heard him. That you can, you know, get started along the path. Now, four questions is probably at a macro level. And we'll drill down into those four questions because we want to know behaviorally some information. We want to know strategically, financially, or personally how these things impact our buyers, et cetera, et cetera. But that is a great starting point. So how can we get our hands on this grid, Stephen?
So we created just a simple URL for people to go to. It's ValueGrid, ValueGrid.io. And you can go there and you can download the Value Grid and use it yourself. You've got some tips and tactics and some other bits of information from using it successfully now with other companies. And so gives you more than just a grid with some questions on it. Actually, it helps you kind of frame it in your own mind. And so go there, valuegrid.io, and you can get a copy yourself and use it in your own business or with your own sales team.
Perfect. And I'll also put it in the show notes. So for those of you who are driving along saying, I'm not going to remember this, it'll be in the show notes, which would be marylutyler.com/podcast/predict, or Stephen Wagner actually be your name. But I'll put all that out there for people so that they can find this grid. Well, Stephen, this has been great. How do people get a hold of you if they want help in filling out their grids? Because I think a lot of it is execution, as you know. We can provide them with the tools, but some people are more sort of like, I would like the help in getting this filled out. Is that, that's a service you obviously offer. So how would they get a hold of you to do that? Or just in general, for general questions as well.
Sure. You can always get a hold of us at, our company is sales-ignition. So just sales and the word -ignition.com is our URL. You can go there and fill that out. And I'm available, Stephen with a V at sales-ignition.com is the best way to get a hold of me and myself or one of our partners or one of our other analysts will reply to you as quickly as you fill that out and hopefully answer your questions and see if it's a fit.
Yeah, and you know, and for those of you listening, I mean, it's 2016 now, we're recording this call, so I think Stephen's a veteran. I mean, he's been doing this a long time. So he's been, like I said, there have been a lot of ups and downs, change in the marketplace. The email engines constantly are changing and needing to be iterating. So I think, you know, you of all people have figured that out, that this really is a lean process that you've come up with. And I think that that is very attractive to startups and also to mid-range companies. And even the upmarket companies are starting to see, like you say, the value of putting the toe in the water for outbound campaigns that are value-driven, they're actually segmented and targeted to those companies that they want to get but may not have any dialogue with for whatever reason. Not everybody uses social, especially in corporations. I mean, there's still the value of using the phone and using email and putting it into a sequence and then a cadence so that you can consistently reach people who will buy your product. Stephen, thank you so much for your time. I very much appreciate it. And I'll put everything in the show notes of how to get a hold of you. And maybe sometime in the future, we can do a webinar on how, you know, filling out the grid. And,
that'd
you
be
know,
great.
Taking a couple clients, either of mine or of yours, and working through that, how you would do that in an immersion sort of way. So like on one webinar, if we can do that.
That'd be awesome.
All right, great.
Love
Thanks
to do
again.
It.
All right, Stephen.
Thank
take
you.
It easy. Bye.
You too. Bye.